Hello and welcome to episode 25 of That Yoga Woman's podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. This week I'm talking to Chelsea Hayden. Chelsea's handle, if that's the right word, on Insta is Loving Life in Wellies, and it looks like that's certainly what she's doing. Scrolling through her Insta, there's loads I want to ask her about. Her gorgeous SUPing Labrador for starters. There's lots of walking, woods, water, and of course yoga, all in the fantastic backdrop of the Welsh wilds of North Wales. Chelsea's based in the Ceiriog Valley. Not really sure where that is, but we'll find out. And she's teaching a mix of indoor classes as well as outdoor yoga sessions over the summer. Like many of us, Chelsea's moving back to in-person classes, so I'll be asking her how she feels about that now that we're slowly coming out of restrictions. She also combines guided walking and wild swimming with yoga for her retreats, so I'll find out more about her love of walking and swimming, as well as kayaking and SUP, her favourite places to go, and her passion for sharing yoga, walking and swimming with others. It's clear that Chelsea's fond of slow and seasonal living, but also embracing the outdoors and all the associated adventures that come with that. So I'll be asking her what that combination means in reality and the impact of that ethos or way of living has on her day-to-day life. Born and raised in urban Manchester, I'll ask Chelsea what her childhood was like and then what city life was like for her in her late teens and early 20s. How did she make the transition to a completely different pace of life in the Welsh countryside? We'll just have to have a listen and find out. I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation. Chelsea, thank you and welcome to That Yoga Woman's podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm enjoying the much needed sun. It's been very hot and it's lovely. Change from a long winter.
Oh, I know. Tell me about it. But being on the northeast, I don't know whether you've seen in the weather forecast, we've been beset by what is known up here as sea fret, F-R-E-T. I think further down the coast in Yorkshire, they call it HAAR, H-A-A-R. And it's like this awful, gloomy mist, not sea fog. It's grim.
It sounds very atmospheric.
Well, it is, but it's cold as well. And it's not sunny. You go inland a few miles and it's glorious sunshine, but it's bogged off today. So we've got sunshine like the rest of the country. So that's good.
Oh, that's good. Always makes you feel happy, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. It just changes your mood, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does.
And you're in the wilds of Welsh Wales.
I am indeed. I love the way you put that, the wilds of Welsh Wales. It could be a book title.
There you go. It could be. If you wanted to write one and use it, I would not mind. So what was it about North Wales that you fell in love with, Chelsea?
Oh, well, I guess the short answer is the amount of blue and green spaces and obviously all the hills. But I guess the long answer is, so it was in Powys in Mid Wales, actually, that I had my first taste of wonderful outdoor spaces. I was dating a chap who lived in the area and I would go and stay at his family's smallholding. So it was just being in the middle of the hills that really did it for me. And I was in awe of just how much space there was. So I guess growing up in an urban area, there was parks and things, but being in that amount of space just took it to a whole new level. So I guess after a few years, when I had the chance to move with my now partner, Rick, to North East Wales, we just jumped at the chance. There's loads of hills here with lots of moorlands and thick with heather, which in the summer is my favourite thing to admire. So yeah, definitely the hills and the amount of space.
And I read that you live in, I want to say the Ceiriog Valley.
That's it, yeah. Some would say Ceiriog, Ceiriog or Ceiriog, and I'm not Welsh speaking, so I can't give you it from a Welsh tongue, but I know it as the Ceiriog Valley.
And where is it near?
So it's between the Dee Valley and the Berwyn Mountains. So it's classed as North East Wales. And the nearest biggest towns are Chirk and Llangollen. So Llangollen is probably the best known for the Eisteddfod. I don't know if you know of the Eisteddfod.
Yeah, that's a festival, isn't it?
That's it, yes. And actually, when I moved here, my geography was so bad, I didn't realise it was so close to Llangollen. I spent a lot of time here as a child with my primary school and my nan, so it was actually lovely to come back. And it's definitely rural compared to what I'm compared to what I grew up with. When I refer to a neighbour, it usually means a field or two away. So we live on a working farm, so there's plenty of animals and nature and tractors. But yeah, my partner and I always say it's a part of the world where we feel like we can hide away from everyone else. So it is lovely.
So going off piste a bit now, you live on a working farm, but you're not like the farmers, are you? How does that work?
No, so the land that we live on is a working farm.
Okay.
Then the house is sort of separate to that.
Ah, I get you. And you started life in Manchester, so you're talking about urban upbringing. What was that like in terms of your childhood and growing up?
Well, let's say the north, because I moved around a lot when I was a kid. And then in my late teens, I gravitated towards Manchester and Liverpool, because that's where I thought there were, you know, more opportunities. So I grew up in a small little town. I grew up in a single parent family in the 90s. I was homeschooled as a teen.
Were you?
I was, yes, which I loved. You know, I got so many, many opportunities from being homeschooled. You know, mom took me out in the fields to draw for art class, and she'd take me to science museums for science class. So it was great, but I did suffer with a bit of anxiety and I guess what we know now is depression. But mum always made an effort to get us outside. And although we lived in what I call concrete council estates with a lot of troubled, you know, neighbourhoods around, parks were our go-to. And my nan always took us away camping and on caravan holidays in Wales, and she loved Wales so much and still does. So maybe that's why it's rubbed off on me.
It must do. Nans are just the best, aren't they? I miss my nan all the time.
I love my nan. She still comes to stay now, and we're trying to get her to move her up to Wales.
So where does she still live then? Is she still up in the north?
Yeah, she is. She's in Cheshire, but she's always wanted to move to Wales and never got the chance to. So now I'm here. I'm like, come on, Nan, you can do it.
Yeah, get yourself down there, Nan. So you did, although you were grew up in the city, there was quite a bit of outdoor adventuring, I guess, through the influence of your family and them knowing how important it was, it sounds like.
Yeah, so... in terms of outdoor adventuring, we did a lot of walks, and like I said, there was a lot of parks and things. But I mean, over the last 5 years or so, there seems to be much more opportunities for adventures in urban areas. Like, for example, paddleboarding at the Albert Dock in Liverpool is an actual thing now, whereas when I was little, it wasn't. And I don't know whether that was because, you know, I wasn't interested in things like that at the time, so I didn't notice. But I shied away from anything like PE, scouts, anything outdoorsy, because I always grew up thinking I wasn't fast or fit enough, or I didn't have enough money to buy the kit. It took me a move to somewhere in the middle of nowhere to debunk those myths.
And they're quite strong. I mean, they are myths, you're totally right, but they can feel quite strongly against you, can't they, sometimes, especially when you're younger and you feel like a lot of it's about image and what you're wearing and rather than what you're actually doing, especially as a teenager and a youngster.
Yeah, definitely. The need to fit in and conform is quite strong, isn't it, when you're a teenager. And I guess with me not going to school or formal school, I didn't have that experience as much. But I guess I wanted to do the normal things a teenager does, you know, go out with their mates and go to the cinema and all of that. Which stuff like that now just doesn't interest me. I'm not a big cinema goer. I don't drink. I'm not a big clubber like I used to be in my teens.
So how did you find friends when you were homeschooling then? My friends were my friends from school. I had a couple of friends outside from other activities, but is that what you did you do other stuff that meant you met other young people then? I just like, I don't know how people that are homeschooled, kids that are homeschooled, find their friends. Is that it?
Well, I like to say now homeschooling is very different and there are more positive attitudes towards it. There are a lot more clubs set up for kids that are homeschooled. When I was homeschooled, it was, you know, quite new. Mum didn't have a lot of support off the education board. And, you know, that was the biggest concern. Would I find people of my own age? And it was difficult to meet people my own age. In fact, I had a lot of friends who were older because they were mum's friends or they were daughters or sons of her friends. So I met friends like that. But I've never been one for being in big groups of people. I'm quite introverted anyway.
It sounds like it was quite a brave thing for her to make the decision to do. Do you have any, are you glad she did that?
I'm really glad. Definitely. It's made me the person who I am today because I've learned really valuable skills, like being able to rely on myself, use my own initiative. And, you know, she did the best that she could for me with what she had at that, you know, given time. And I'm sure she'd do it differently now, but you can't change these things, can you? So, yeah, it's definitely made me more self-reliant and more resilient as well.
So when you finished your schooling, what did you do for work in the city?
Well, so my mum's always been, she's always worked for herself. So that's really influenced me. I had one job as a teenager when I was about 16 or 17 as a retail assistant. And I just couldn't cope. Too many people in demand. It just put me off life, I think. I went to college quite a bit and I learned various things. I went and did business admin, beauty therapy, complementary therapy, accounts, you name it. I was looking for something. But one thing always stuck, and that was I was good at computers and being online. So I'd done a lot of that through my teenage years because being online was mentally easier than being around people. So from that, I kind of fell into freelancing, digital marketing and copywriting.
So did you set up your own business with that then, Chelsea, or were you working for a company?
Yeah. So I was freelance and still am, still freelancing. Yeah. So I, funnily enough, what got me into it was I submitted an article for an online fashion magazine and it was accepted and they paid me to go down and work London Fashion Week.
Ooh.
Yeah, I was responsible for reporting and did a bit of backstage stuff and come back and had to do obviously all the content for it. And I did that for a little while, actually. And then my mum's friend, she was a hairdresser and she was just setting up a business. And she was like, oh, I need somebody to do my web copy. I'll do it. So I volunteered. And I've been doing it ever since. Just become second nature to me now.
And what kind of websites? Is it all sorts?
All sorts, yeah, all sorts. I've done loads of things. I've done everything from finance to fashion to beauty to technology. Nowadays, I like to work with companies who have a bit more of a green outlook.
So, interesting. So you're bringing a bit of yourself to the people you, I suppose that comes with being able to be a bit picky about who you're working with.
Yes, definitely. I've worked with so many, you know, different sectors and businesses that were looking back wrong for me, but right for me at the time. So yeah, I guess a decade on, I'm a bit more picky now, or at least I'm trying to be a bit more picky.
But that's the beauty of working for yourself, isn't it? And you can be a bit more picky and working in a digital environment. You can just work online, I guess, and it means you can be mobile. You're not tied to an office. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, completely. You can be a lot more mobile. Although where I live, it's so rural, the internet isn't the best. So I do have to go out and I've got a little office space in Llangollen where I go to do my work because otherwise I don't get anything done. Plus, and I live in such a beautiful area, I'd rather go out for a walk.
See, that's the thing with this like digital nomad lifestyle. It sounds very exciting, but actually you do need a good Wi-Fi connection, joking aside, don't you? You do need to be able to actually have a proper stable connection.
You definitely do. Mm.
So you've got your little office space in Llangollen. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was all right, wasn't it? I did okay. But then, so that, I guess that makes it feel like a proper job. How many days would you say you were in the office?
It varies, really. I usually come in about 2 times a week at the moment. Obviously, during lockdown, no times a week.
Yeah.
But, yeah, 2 times a week. And I try and get as much done as I can in those 2 days. I don't want to be doing 5 days a week behind a computer. That's not my vision.
No.
I'm a big fan of the 4-day working week, or the 3-day working week, actually. Big fan of that. So, yeah, I try to follow that.
And how's that going?
It's going all right. I still find myself with a nighttime thinking, oh, I should check my emails now. Oh, I've forgotten to do this.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it, when you work for yourself, especially. You just want to, it doesn't feel like work sometimes, even though it is.
But I find I feel more productive working shorter days than I do, you know, normal 9 to 5 hours. I get a lot more done in 4 hours than I would do in 8.
Mm.
Mm.
And so was there something specific that happened to make you want to move to the country, or was it quite a slow process? Just explain how that went.
Oh, it's a long answer.
Go on, we've got time.
So I'd been freelancing for a few years and I was taking on contracts for great money, but I just really disliked them. And I was always in the process of building my business, which meant really long days at the computer and constantly being glued to my phone. And my health was beginning to suffer. So I was having seizures, headaches, lots of stress.
Blimey, seizures. Yeah. That's not just a stress. That's like a physical manifestation of severe stress, isn't it? Having stuff like that.
I was a lock myself away in a dark room and have a computer on for 12 hours a day. Not eating properly, you know, not sleeping properly. And just generally making unhealthy life choices. But it was at the same or around the same time I was going away for weekends on the smallholding that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And I was having entire weekends without any internet, any phone, and just time off. It was just much needed space. I got to hike, swim, explore. And then after about 6 months or so, I started dreading the idea of coming back to normal life.
Hmm.
And after 2 years, I knew something had to change. So my location to begin with. So I spent some time in Shropshire, which is just as beautiful and quiet. And then I lived on a small holding and I lived in an old mill there. And then I met my partner, Rick, now, who's had a lovely childhood running around in his granddad's forest in Wales. and, you know, very different to me. But we both just wanted a laid back and simple and greener lifestyle. And I guess we've sort of been living that ever since. It's always a work in progress.
But how did you, just explain a bit more, how you made the transition from kind of that urban living to country? Well, in your words, this is not my words, your words, a country bumpkin. So did it take a lot of planning? Because the practicalities of deciding, right, I'm going to move. I guess there's people that plan moves, aren't there? And there's people that plan them and then just get on and do them. So was there a lot of procrastination involved, or what did you just think, right, let's crack on and go for it?
Yeah, so the whole process took 3 months, so not that long, and it felt like ages. So my ex's mum actually helped me move. She was in property at that time, knew quite a few landlords, so she helped me move over to Shropshire.
Nice. it's like she's getting you out of the way. Cheerio.
Yeah. But I remember living in an old mill on the outskirts of a market town called Oswestry.
Mm.
And it felt so rural. So compared to where I am now, you know, it wasn't. But next door had chickens. And saying out loud sounds silly, but it was a shock to the system. I was only used to stray cats and dogs. 3 months it took, but unfortunately about a week before I moved, someone broke into the house, and I woke up with this man standing over me.
Oh my God.
I just knew it wasn't the place I was meant to be, you know. It was like, get me out of there as soon as possible.
Was this in the old mill?
No, this is before I moved to Shropshire. So this was in Manchester. Yeah, this is when I was in Manchester. And I was in the process of moving.
So you had just woke up in the night and this bloke was in your house?
Yeah, basically it was a group of guys that had been trying to get into places, and I left my door unlocked, and he just come in. I chased him out.
Good for you.
I think I remember waking up and just like in a panic screaming at him and chased him out the front room and out the kitchen, out the house.
God, that did they take anything or?
He didn't, no, they were just opportunists, I think, just seeing what they could get into.
That must have been really traumatic, actually.
It was. It took me a while before I was able to sort of sleep in the dark, again. Sadly, I hate to say, but growing up as a Council Street kid, it's something which isn't unheard of. It's quite common.
Oh, so that was it. Now, that was a big sign that it's like, time to move.
Yeah.
Trying to do something different.
Tell
me about the yoga, Chelsea. When did you start doing yoga?
Oh, let me think. So I was about 19. It was at a community centre. So this is when I was back in Manchester. Mm. And I hated it.
Did you?
I just didn't like it. So I know there's obviously all different styles of yoga, but like the teacher spent most of the session talking about pains, aches and ailments,
right,
and it didn't resonate with me. Being a copywriter, I understand the importance of language and the effects it has on the mind and the body.
Hmm.
So that class didn't resonate with me. And I also felt very body conscious to practice in front of others. So I took up a home practice.
Right.
Ooh.
How's that?
I loved home practice. I really enjoyed it. Have been to classes, obviously, since.
Yeah.
Home practice was lovely because I was able to just work at my own pace. And if I didn't feel like doing something, I didn't feel like, is the teacher or is everyone else thinking, judging me? I know they're not, but it's things that go through our mind, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. I think, do you have to be quite disciplined?
I think I wasn't. I realised how better I felt after it, not even physically, but mentally, And when you realise something's good for you, then you're going to want to do it more. But there are days, even now as a teacher, that I don't practice yoga because yoga for me isn't just movement. Yoga for me is going outdoors, having a bit of time out, meditating, learning, self-study. Mm. There's all different aspects of yoga.
Definitely. And what led you into teaching? So did you decide to sort of change your career completely, or do you still do the freelance copywriting and digital like web stuff on the side?
Yeah, so for now I'm a part-time yoga teacher and I still freelance full-time. I've never been able to do just one thing. I love variety. But I did my teacher training for self-study purposes, and I know so many teachers say that, don't they?
Yeah.
I've heard it so many times.
Teachers that start not intending to teach, I was one of those.
I
think probably it's a bit of a defence thing, so I would say that, and then if I wasn't any good, it was like, well, I didn't really want to teach anyway. That's probably why I said it, looking back.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. The same, I didn't think I'd ever have the confidence to teach. But I got into yoga to learn how to breathe better. So I had seasonal asthma as a child. And also, I needed the mental time out. And mostly my hands. So sitting behind a computer a lot meant I constantly had sore hands and wrists.
Oh.
So I think my first introduction to yoga was an online yoga video dedicated to hands and wrists.
Right.
So that was how really I sort of got into it. But I've always loved doing yoga outdoors as well. And obviously when I moved to the countryside, I had all these beautiful spaces to then go practice in. And I was keeping a blog at the time, which talked about slowing down and living rurally, and yoga started to creep in there.
Yeah.
So after a weekend of teaching a class as part of my YTT, it occurred to me that maybe this is something I could do. Maybe.
Yeah.
Had it in the back of my mind. And I went and did it. I think it's like, I only started 2019 teaching, so I'm so new.
That's quite a challenge then, isn't it? So what was your, if you started in 2019, what was your life like before the pandemic? So you started teaching. What did a typical kind of week look like for you? So maybe in the office and doing digital stuff part-time, what kind of teaching were you doing and where were you doing it?
It's really hard to think about what life looked like pre-pandemic, if I'm honest. And I've asked myself, was that because I was doing too much and it just all blended into one? But I was teaching 3 months. I was 3 months in before COVID hit. So really, really new. But I knew there was a lot of computer work involved. But I'd always make a big effort to get outside as much as I could for fresh air and a stretch. And then I was teaching one night a week in a local studio, which was lovely, actually. It was an evening class. It was really chilled out. Just what you need when you first begin.
Yeah.
Because obviously I couldn't work from home because of my internet, I would walk to my office twice a week. So it was about an hour and a half walk over the hills to get to my office.
Wow.
So I don't drive.
Oh, you don't drive?
I'm a person living rurally that doesn't drive. At the moment, that's going to change soon.
Is it? Are you learning?
I was learning. I was about to put in for my test when everything happened. It's been put on hold.
That's bad timing. That's a shame.
I know, but I've got a car and I do get out to drive and my partner drives, and which is fantastic, because I don't think we could actually survive up there without any forms of transport.
No. no, it's sad, isn't it? For the environmentally, it's sad, but like you say, you just wouldn't be able to get anywhere. And it's hard. People have to say, oh, like, it'd be, like, cycle and stuff, but it's hard work if you've got stuff to carry.
Well, in my defence, I've spent 30 years of my life not driving.
So exactly.
I've done a lot of walking, a lot of cycling, a lot of carpools. So I've definitely got my green badge there.
You have. You definitely have. And with the companies that you're selecting to work with now as well. The last year then, did you teach online? Or, I mean, I'm assuming last year, the pandemic wise, a lot of the time you spent was at outdoors, walking or doing SUP and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, a huge amount of time outdoors, and also getting to know my local area as well even more. I found so many like different walks and like little waterfalls and iron hill forts and all little things on the map that I would never have usually paid attention to. But I guess my default mode was still to stay in and Netflix.
Really?
It definitely was. So I think in the first lockdown, I had a bit of a setback mentally. So where we live, as I said, the internet isn't great. So with everyone being at home, it was much, much slower. And I felt very cut off. I wasn't able to do much video calling with friends or have meetings for work. And then work pretty much dried up altogether. So I had lots of free time on my hands. And it was funny because I talk a lot about slowing down and doing less. And then suddenly I was having to take my own advice and it was really challenging. But I think by the second one, I felt like I'd gathered some much needed mental strength. And I actually enjoyed the time I had instead of having to think about the future. It was lovely to just be in the now.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think the second one was a lot harder than the first one for me, just because of the dark and bad weather and Christmassy, that lethargy that came. It was just much more challenging. Whereas the last one, it was like amazing weather. The first one, rather, amazing weather, just loads of dog walks and being outdoors. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So how do you feel about moving back to in-person classes? I see that you're doing a couple of outdoor sessions and indoor sessions weekly at a local studio. How is that going?
Oh, I love it. It's so good to be back. I just realised, actually, I didn't answer your question about teaching online, and I guess it falls into this one. I did do a few classes online, but I just didn't find it very fulfilling. The whole thing felt like something out of a Black Mirror episode. Don't know if you've ever seen one.
I've only seen one, and it was terrifying, so we didn't watch another one.
And it just didn't feel right. I just didn't get the same connection or vibes from teaching online, so I didn't pursue it. And there are many wonderful online teachers, and I'm just not one of them, and I've decided that's okay. But in terms of getting back to in-person classes, I'm so happy, really, really happy. The studio I'm at now has got a lot of space and natural light.
Yeah, it looks lovely. What is that? Do you want to give them a name check?
Yeah, they're Open Space Studios in Oswestry Street, and they are a community interest company. So they provide well-being days and classes for the benefit of the local community.
Oh, what a nice thing to be involved in.
Lovely, yeah. It really aligns with my values, actually, of help and community. But as for the outdoor ones, yeah, providing the weather holds, I'm static.
Have you done plenty of outdoor ones so far? Because where I've been, the weather's been absolutely shocking, and my outdoor sessions have been basically nil. I've done two, so I've moved into a venue now because I was fed up of looking at the weather and thinking, no, got to cancel again.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, well, no, I haven't done many. So I did my first one yesterday, and the weather was glorious. It was 25 and blue skies and sunny, and it was so hot. I've got some really beautiful locations actually around me to teach at, so I'm super, super fortunate. And one of the classes, well, the one I did yesterday, is sort of working alongside the Canal and River Trust.
Yeah, I saw that. Tell us how that came about. That looked really interesting and beautiful.
Yeah, so the Canal and River Trust obviously have got this big mission to get people, you know, by and on the water. They'd done some yoga sessions with a local yoga teacher, I think maybe a few years ago. And so anyway, they just contacted me. I think they'd followed my page maybe on Facebook and asked me whether I'd be up for doing a few classes. And I said yes. I jumped at the chance, actually. it was when we were in lockdown, or maybe before we were in lockdown. Yeah, it was before we were going into lockdown. I'd planned them for summer gone.
Right.
I don't know now. I don't know whether that's true, because I can't remember.
It's all right.
I remember being really disappointed that they couldn't run. So where I am, it's next to a World Heritage site. So I won't try to pronounce the name because it's very Welsh. but it's Canal Side, and it's near to a really beautiful viaduct. Right. It's a World Heritage site. So part of the proceeds are being donated to the trust, which is lovely. And then my other location is an equally lovely property called Plasnewith in Llangollen. So they've got big, large green grounds and plenty of space just to, you know, throw some shapes for Ace. Oh,
lovely. Well, I hope you have good weather.
Thank you.
What are you planning in terms of your future teaching? More of the same, more outdoors? I mean, as the weather starts to turn, like, are you going to look at other local venues, obviously sticking with the studio that you're working with? Like, how do you see things going forwards? You're still so new in your teaching career, aren't you? I hadn't really thought about that.
I'm still figuring it all out. I'm so new to it, and I can't decide yet. Ultimately, though, I know I want to get more people into the outdoors, and yoga seems to be a great way of doing that. So I think I want to focus more on wellness experience days and retreats.
Yeah.
And I'm really passionate about accessible yoga and showing people that it isn't about being on your mat and throwing fancy shapes. You know, there's so much more to it. So, as the weather turns, obviously we will go indoors. And I'm definitely going to, you know, keep the studios that I'm at. But where I can, I'll be outdoors as much as possible.
Oh, good. Sounds like a plan. So I've seen as well, you've got a gorgeous Labrador on your SUP. Like, I want to go into SUP, but I've done a bit of dabbling, but I've not got my own. And now I'm by the sea, I don't really think I've got an excuse to not do it. I'd love to do it. And I've seen pictures of your big lab sat on your SUP. I'd love that with my boy. I don't think he'd come anywhere near. He doesn't really trust me. He's his dad's dog, but well, I'd love it. So is it a she?
She's called Bella.
Bella. Do you take her out much with you?
Oh, loads. So I just want to point out, she's the dog of many names. We call her Ladyface, Butterbean, Bella Deus, Bellarina. She's got many names.
Bellarina. What a name. I love that.
I know. I love it. But yeah, she comes with me everywhere, even to classes. I take her to yoga classes as well. And actually worries about having a dog and how it impacts teaching. But Bella's become a big part of my yoga practice. She's taught me so much about myself, and she's offered me so much emotional support, love and kindness that I feel she is yoga. So yeah, we've been taking her on the water since she was about 4 months old.
So she's well used to it.
She's five now. So granted, we both capsized on a sit on top kayak the first time. She was 4 months, and it took her a while to trust me again, but but yeah, we've done so much together. We took a dog stand up paddleboard specific course together a few years ago.
Wow.
That was ace. It's, you know, taught me loads of little tips and tricks.
I didn't know there was such things. I'm gonna have to look at that now.
It's really useful, just getting them used to the paddle and getting them used to being on the board out of water, you know, so on land, giving them treats, obviously making it fun for them. And you know, she does get a bit whiny now and then, but we've got a little compromise, so I'll usually like let her off and let her swim, and then she'll get back on and let me get on with it.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Absolute dream time. You've got other animals, haven't you, as well? Can you tell me a bit about them?
Yes, I've got a cat, a 17-year-old cat, Mr. D. Also a cat of many names, including Dennis the Menace, D-Train and Depot Davenger. I've got a lot of wild birds since lockdown, taking it upon myself to feed the entire bird population. We've got a pet sheep called Wonky, so she's not mine. She belongs to the local landowner, but I pet and talk to her most days, so I've kind of adopted her.
Yeah.
And then the plan was to get hens. I've had them before, but there are so many foxes, which I love, but I just can't face the thought of, you know, my hens being eaten. So maybe in the future when I'm at home more.
Yeah. Yeah, because that'd be devastating, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So you SUP, you kayak and wild swim. I even saw that you've got an archery target in your garden. Can you tell me more about your love of the outdoors? Like, are there other activities that you do that I haven't listed?
So by the way, the archery target was a lockdown buy. Oh. But it's been fun. It's been fun, actually. So I guess from growing up, I didn't have much access to the outdoors, and I only realised that as an adult, so it's become a really big part of me. But anything water-based has always been a big deal. I probably would have described myself as phobic towards it. Right. I had a bit of a childhood incident, but I've worked really hard, I think, to feel safe and relaxed in and on water. But gorge walking, that was my first introduction into being around water properly.
Right.
It kind of got me over my phobia. Did a bit of kayak and canoe, and then SUP or stand up paddleboard felt like a bit of a natural progression.
So just to explain, because I've done a bit of gorge walking because I went on a activity holiday when I was at school, and I didn't like how well, just explain to people what it is and I'll say why I didn't like it.
Oh, brilliant. I guess you walk up streams and little rapids, and you jump off into waterfalls, but you're always closely connected to the ground and to the water.
Yes, which is cool, but you would think that the bottom of a stream would be quite, in my mind when I was a child, not a child, I mean it was like pre-teen really, I suppose we were like young teenagers, Like, why wasn't the ground flat? That's what I didn't like. And there's like loads of rocks up these gorges. So you'd just stagger around, like fall over, smack your knee on a rock. Like, I was like, why isn't the riverbed smooth and sandy and easy to walk on? So I just did a little bit of it. It's like, no, I don't like this. This unevenness of the gorge is not helping me.
It's a very tactile thing to do, though. That's what I love about it, because you're always touching the rocks and your hands are in the water and you're stopping yourself from falling over. And
yeah, even now I'm just like, no, yeah. I just know it brought it all back. I don't think I thought about it since just talking about it. But I have the same feeling now when if I'm like on the rocks by the bay where I am, there's like rock pools and stuff, and I have that feel like it's just that unevenness. Oh, that looks a bit slippy. There's green on that. Yeah. Probably going to fall over. Yeah, just that stress of it's just coming back now.
Oh, but I feel a bit like that with the sea.
What, when you're swimming or in the sea?
In the sea. I'm not a fan of swimming in the sea. So I love wild swimming, and I'll do it in rivers and lakes, but I won't really go in the sea.
You'll have to come up here, because I've only been in the sea and I haven't been in a river or a lake or anything yet. I've only swum in the sea. I'm doing it tends to be a weekly thing now.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, if I lived on the coast, I would I would make the most of it, definitely. But it's not my preferred environment to be in.
No. And I also saw that you do like guided hill walking and swimming with yoga for your retreats. Just tell me a bit more about that and those.
Yeah, sure. So they're mostly set in my local area. So the Ceriog and Dee Valley, with guides who know the best spots. So I don't lead the walks or the swims. I get people in who are qualified and insured to do that. But I think the key difference with mine is I always make a point of talking about how they're meant to be slow, paced and mindful. It's easy to think that to enjoy yourself in the outdoors, you have to be fit and fast to keep up, especially group type activities. And that's not my cup of tea. And I know there are many others who feel the same. I like to talk about them being sort of beginner friendly. And I guess that's where the guides come in, because they know their routes and, you know, they know the best possible outcomes, I guess, for beginners. You know, we're not going to take beginners up really dangerous, craggy mountains because they're not going to have, you know, a great experience if they're not used to being in the outdoors. I guess I want to kind of gently ease people into it and show them that you don't have to go out and be extreme to actually enjoy your time outside. There's a level for everyone, I guess you could say.
Definitely. And what are some of your favourite places to explore? Like, have you got any secret places that you can share with me and the listeners?
Hi, I get asked this loads. So I will say, I think in the last year, there's been such an increase of people getting outside. And it's really important, obviously, to encourage everyone to help protect our environment. I think learning how to use a map helps to stop too many people overcrowding already popular areas. So I don't tend to share lesser known places online. But that said, I think the likes of the National Trust do a great job of providing easy, accessible and looked after spaces for people of all ages and abilities. So locally, I guess my favourites are Chirk Castle, where you can segue through the woods.
Oh, wow.
There's Teemauer Country Park, which is like this lovely space and a great place for a dip on the River Dee. And I guess I love paddleboarding along the Llangollen Canal, especially over the Chirk Aqueduct, which is quite frightening but beautiful at the same time.
So you go across an aqueduct on your SUP, like high?
That would
be quite scary.
So there's two aqueducts nearby. One, you're not allowed to paddleboard over it. And then the other one that I do at Chirk, is really high. And it's got a viaduct next to it, so like the trains go past you as well. Of course, you share the waterways with the boats as well. So, yeah, you're always on the lookout.
I bet. It's a lot of fun. And I said in the introduction, it's clear that you're a fan of slow and seasonal living. So That sounds lovely, but what does that really mean for you, and how does that ethos manifest in your daily life?
That's a really good question. I think slow living to me means giving myself the time and space to make well thought out decisions. And that usually means having less in my life. But that is a work in progress. And I seem to always end up filling my time with something. So, yeah, it's definitely about having less in your life. But seasonal living, for me, it means noticing the shift or the changes in the weather and the nature, and then trying to live in tune with them. So eating foods in season, that's quite an obvious one. But I guess essentially it's about embracing what you have in that moment. It's an incredibly mindful way of living. Not easy, you know, it definitely takes some thought behind and some planning. And it's always a work in progress.
Yeah, so how would you become more seasonal? Because I struggle with like seasonal food, because I just buy the same things from the supermarket because they're always there. I don't think about where they're grown or what they're, I mean, I try to a little bit more now, but it's just so automatic. I just get the same things because I like them. And they don't, if they weren't there or it said in a bigger letters like where they were flown in from, I probably would think about it a bit more. But like you say, that's just another example. But how do we become a bit more seasonal? Have you got any suggestions?
Well, you know, in terms of food as well, there's a great seasonal food guide by the BBC. The BBC Bite Size do one, and they give you a month-by-month account of all the foods that are ready to eat in those seasons. That's helped me because I can, you know, meal plan a little bit more. And just simple things like growing herbs, you know, growing your own food on the windowsill doesn't take a lot of space. But I, you know, there's other things. I love to make an effort to follow the phases of the moon. So it helps to sort of slow the months down because they tend to blend into each other. And I like to learn about the folklore associated with each phase. I love learning about constellations because there are some which only appear in, say, winter, for example. So that's a nice way of, you know, acknowledging the changes of the seasons. But even something like finding out which birds come over to the UK, it can help you learn about the seasonal changes. For example, we have Canada geese that nest in our local ponds, and they come over every spring. And that's like the official start to the season for me. It's like, yes, the geese are here. It's spring. So it's a nice reminder. Things don't, you know, they don't stay the same. Things are always changing. And I think living seasonally, that becomes easier to digest and to accept. But I think I've got two friends over at Creative Countryside and Folk and Field, and they're brilliant, brilliant starting places for anyone that wants to learn more about the slow and seasonal ethos.
Oh, good. Thanks for sharing that. What are you most proud of in your life so far, Chelsea?
Oh, this really made me think. I would say being okay or comfortable with asking for help. I think it's something that I, as a teenager, really struggled with. And as a young adult, I did. I always thought that I had to take the weight of the world on my shoulders. But yeah, I guess over the last year or so, I've really learned that it's okay to ask for help.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And so another question I always ask people at the end of these interviews is, if you weren't a yoga teacher, what would you be? But you can't say digital marketeer or copywriter or anything else.
It would be something related to therapy and or the environment. Actually, if I could combine the two.
I don't know how you'd combine the two. What would job do you think that would be?
Well, you can be like an ecotherapist now, can't you?
So can you? What's that?
You have don't ask me because I'm not one, but I think it's my understanding that you have a background in counselling or, you know, some kind of therapy.
Yeah.
And then you take that session outside and you combine the two. So a friend of mine, she does walk and talk therapies, so she takes a walk and has the therapy session. I think that's just such a beautiful thing to do. You know, I get so much eco-therapy from being outdoors. I'd love that. But yeah, or something conservation related, something that's, you know, focused on saving the planet.
Sounds good. So we're moving on to quick fire questions now. Chelsea, are you ready for these?
I am.
All right. Late to bed or early to rise?
I'm forced early to rise. I was left to my own devices. It'd be late to bed.
Favorite tune to dance to?
Oh God, these are hard. favorite tune. Nothing's coming to mind. But anything like drum and bass. Anything drum and bass.
Who do you look up to?
My nan.
Oh, what's your favourite film?
I can't remember the name of it. It's with Julia Roberts. I can't remember. It's like Eat, Pray, Love. That's a lot. I've read the book, but love the film as well. Yes.
I watched that recently because someone on these questions said it was their favourite film. So I was like, well, I've got to watch it then.
That's a good film.
I'm glad I watched it. On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
3.
Mountainside or lakeside?
Lakeside.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Neither.
What? You can't say that. No one's ever said that.
If I was forced to choose.
Yeah, you are forced to choose. You've got to say one or the other.
I'm going to go for Leonardo DiCaprio because I love all the green work he does for the planet. And the
animals. That's a good reason. Yeah, that's good enough. Okay. What's your star sign?
I'm a Libra.
Who would you swap lives with for a day?
God, these are hard questions.
You keep saying that. I mean, I'm just asking them.
Who would I swap? Oh, my dog, Bella.
Countryside or city? I think that's an obvious one for you.
Countryside.
If you owned a yacht, what would you call it?
Ballerina.
Oh, I love that. Ballerina. What is at the top of your bucket list, Chelsea?
Top of my bucket list would be to contribute more to the community and just give back as much as I can.
Oh, that sounds good. Describe your baddest and brightest leggings.
Baddest and brightest leggings. Oh, my favourite pair are turquoise with yellow and black bees.
Bees?
Yeah, bees.
I thought that's what you said. What's your favourite place in the whole wide world?
Wales. Definitely Wales.
Did they pay you to say that?
No, I just love it.
What's your favourite yoga pose?
Favourite yoga, child's pose. Love child's pose. Resting and stretching at the same time.
Yeah, good. That sounds a good answer. Thank you for those. Just lastly to Savasana sounds, this is where you just tell me what you like to do your relaxation to. If it's silence or if there's a particular track you want to recommend to the listeners, do that now.
Yeah, not a track as such, but an album. There's a guy called Fred Westerer, and he's on Spotify. And he's got some beautiful, soothing sounds. So I really recommend him.
Fred Westerer, is that like West?
It's West and then T-E-R-A.
Oh.
I don't know whether I'm pronouncing that right. But
I don't know. Okay. Right. That's good. I've not heard of him before, so I'm going to check him out, and I'll put his details in the episode notes so other people can have a listen to as well. So there's really some lovely stuff that people have sent, and it's so nice to hear other yoga teachers' recommendations because it's all really lovely stuff. So thank you for sharing that. That's good. Really appreciate you taking the time to chat to me, Chelsea. It's been fab getting to know you. Listeners, you can contact Chelsea through her socials. On Facebook, she is Loving Life in Wellies Yoga. And on Insta, love her Insta, she is Loving Life in Wellies. Please tell her what you thought of the podcast. And if you've got any questions for her, I'm sure she would be more than happy to answer them. Thank you, Chelsea.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been great. My first ever podcast.
First one done. First of many. You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it, share it on social media, rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops. I designed a small range of vest tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. Have a look online, check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.